We're really excited to be collaborating with Becky from Becky's Notes, a UK-based resource to produce an infographic for all our visual learners out there. Becky's Notes brings together all the key topics medical students need to know in a readily available place, reviewed by specialists in the field. These visually striking notes are a refreshing change from all the boring textbooks. You can check her out on Instagram at beckysnotes01 and support her at the links below. Welcome, everyone, to 1pm. Got a few guests with us today. We've got Michael Offerman.
G'day.
We've got Lucy.
Hello.
Nice to have you here. And we have JT.
Yes, hi. JT's, hi, everyone.
JT's going to be telling us about everyone's favorite topic, febrile neutropenia.
Yes.
Take it away, JT.
Thanks, guys. I thought we should go over this topic, febrile neutropenia, because it's a oncological emergency. So technically only Aiden and I and Lucy have gone through febrile neutropenia.
And I'll stop you right there. I don't remember what I went through.
No. But it was one of the...
I know it's something that exists, but
it was one of those three oncological emergencies along with Cauda equina syndrome, febrile neutropenia, tumor lysis. Anyhow, on the first principles, there's a few things that we'd like to talk about. And then the idea is that everything that I give you within the first principles will be able to give you the ideas of the clinical features, the management of febrile neutropenia in the case of an oncological emergency. Ready?
Awesome.
Sweet. Okay. Two first principles that I want to go over are what neutrophils are and what fever is, because that's in the word febrile neutropenia, right? So let's just start off easy. What is the range of a normal temperature in healthy individuals? Michael or Lucy?
About 36.5 to 37.5, maybe 37.8, somewhere around there.
Sure, okay.
And I would agree.
Sure, that's right. So the normal body temperature range does actually vary quite a bit, but I'd say the normal range would be 36.5 to 37.5. Okay. Now, moving on to neutrophils and the bone marrow. They're based on two colors. Do we remember this?
Yeah, no.
Not me.
What color are red blood cells?
Red.
Red. So there's a red bone marrow.
Go.
Now the other bone marrow. And what color is fat when you dissect a human body?
What? Now you're throwing me a curveball.
What were you going to say?
What color is fat?
You said white blood cells. I was going to say red. I mean, I was going to say white blood cells because Mike said red.
Yeah, is it yellow?
What color is fat? Let's see.
What color are the arches of McDonald's?
I would say yellow.
Yellow, good. But then the other color is red. So bone marrow, think of Maccas. So red bone marrow is where you have the blood stem cells, and that's where you create the red blood cells, the white blood cells, and the yellow bone marrow is where you create the fat, the cartilage, and the bone. These are the two main types of bone marrow. Mm. Okay?
Cool.
Good. What are hematopoietic progenitors? Have you heard of that word before? I might not be pronouncing it right.
They're your precursors.
Precursors, yeah. And if we have to think about leukemia, there are two large categories, right? So it's acute blank leukemia, acute L leukemia. The M and L are the two progenitor types, which you know what they are.
Acute myeloid leukemia.
Yes, good. Okay. So that's one pathway of cell production, and the other one is?
What was I gonna say?
Michael, would you know?
Probably lymphoblastic or lymphoblasts.
Lymphoid. Lymphoblasts are the original cells, and lymphoid is the lineage. Good. And so these two types, myeloid and lymphoid, the type of cells that come from myeloid are neutrophils, eosinophils, basophils. Lymphoid, you get the T cells and B cells. So they perform different functions in the immune system. So you have two main types of immunity.
Is that innate and adaptive?
Yes, and which one is which?
The blood cells would be innate and the T cells and B cells would be adaptive.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, good. That's another first principle. Okay, moving on. Now, the prefix here is myelo. So myelodysplastic syndrome, myelofibrosis, multiple myeloma. What does myelo mean in this case?
Bone marrow?
Bone marrow, yeah, good, okay. So these are all conditions related to the bone marrow that has somehow been screwed up. So myelodysplastic means it's bone marrow in which it's no longer functioning. Myelofibrosis means there's fibrosis within the bone marrow.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm still there.
Good, all right. Because it was febrile neutropenia, what are neutrophils?
Part of your white cells?
Yes, and what... They're the first immune cells to respond to what in the body? Just a broad term.
What, infection?
Yeah, lovely, yeah. So they're considered professional bacterial responders, okay? So they're the main soldiers in our body to respond.
Is that the actual title? Professional bacterial responders?
This is what the consultant said when he commented on my thing. Professional bacterial responders. Yeah.
I love it.
Okay.
Just to confirm, is it only bacteria?
No, but he says there is a role in viral infections, but it's easier just to say bacteria. Mm-hmm. Okay, good question.
Oh.
Okay, so importantly, how would you have to measure neutrophils? When you order bloods, what do you look for to measure neutrophil count?
What blood do you order? Isn't a full blood count?
Yeah, and what inside the full blood count tells you the amount of neutrophils in the blood?
The marker that says neutrophils.
There's an official term for this. It's the absolute neutrophil count, the ANC. And this is important because there's a cutoff in febrile neutropenia that we'll talk about. Okay?
Wait, hang on. When you look on the iClinical Manager, does it say absolute neutrophil count? Just say neutrophil.
No, it just says neutrophils.
It's fucking neutrophils, right? But that is the absolute neutrophil count.
I think so.
Okay, good. All right, move along.
Let's move on.
Move on.
Okay. So now that you know that the neutrophils, what's the normal range of neutrophils in blood tests? Are you aware of that?
According to ISOFT, it'd be 4 to 11.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's good. The one I have here, according to leukemia.org.au, is 5 to 8 times 10 to this 9, I think. So 4 to 11. So if you were thinking about febrile neutropenia, obviously, penia means lack of. So there's a lack of neutrophils. There are different ranges to the absolute the ANC. If there's mild neutropenia, it's 1 to 1.5 times 10 to the power of 9. What's moderate, Michael, then? If it drops by 0.5, what's the range?
Okay.
So, yeah. Moderate. So moderate would be?
Maybe like 0.5 to 1.
Good. And what's severe, Lucy?
So then 0, I suppose, to
Or less, yeah, 0 less to 0, less, yeah, less than 0.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. And Adrian?
Oh, fuck.
What's profound?
Is it, can you have negative?
It can't go negative, but it's less than 0.1.
Oh.
There's no way you've gone that. But, yeah, but these are the different grades.
Sure.
So could you recap that, Michael? What are the different grades of neutropenia?
Neutropenia. So if it's mild, it'd be 1 to 1.5 times 10 to the 9. If it was moderate, it'd be 0.5 to 1.
Yeah, good.
And if it would be severe, it'd be 0 to 0.5. Yep. And if it was profound, it would be less than 0.1.
Yeah, that's good. All right.
The normal range was 4 to 11. Is that what you said, right?
That's what ISOFT tells me, so I take that as gospel.
Yeah, okay. And what's the consequence of having too few neutrophils, Lucy? We talked about what neutrophils are and what happens when you have too few.
You can't fight said infection, I suppose.
Yeah, especially opportunistic infections. And so that's why it becomes an issue, and then the fever is a body's response to that infection. Okay, the last first principle, according to neutrophils and bone marrow, is broadly speaking, just think about categories as a form of thinking about your diagnoses. Why will there be too few neutrophils in the body?
I reckon I know because I've listened to many episodes of First Principles, so I know how you break it down. So is it not producing enough or getting destroyed too much?
Yeah, that's good. So those are the two broad categories. Does that make sense?
You can tell. You can tell that Michael Hoffman listens. You can tell.
That's great. You can tell. So let's go to those examples. So Lucy, you earlier... So this is talking about the etiology now. So cancer treatments, what does that fall under? What category does that fall under?
So immunosuppression, yes?
Yes,
no?
But which category that Michael brought up earlier?
Not producing enough then.
Not producing enough, yeah. Okay, so chemoradiotherapy is the most common cause of febrile neutropenia.
Mm.
Good. What's another example, Mike, that can reduce neutrophil production? And this relates to all the first principles I talked about earlier.
Yeah, maybe one of the cancers that you said before, like some sort of leukemia.
Yep. But I also spent a huge set of time asking you about these, the ones with all the same prefix.
The myeloid things.
Myeloid stuff. So anything that relates to the bone marrow.
All right.
Because they won't be able to produce those neutrophils from those progenitors.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
So how would you describe that? Bone marrow what?
Disorders. Yeah. Good. All right. Now, Adrian, what are things that can increase neutrophil destruction? There's some examples there. Yeah.
I don't know. If you're really sick, Can you just use it up too much?
Yeah. So what can cause you to be real sick using the surgical sieve?
Infections like sepsis?
Yeah, good. Sepsis, hepatitis, TB, active infections can increase neutrophil destruction.
Okay.
Lucy, give me another one using a surgical sieve.
Surgical sieve. I don't know. I'm going to go some sort of autoimmune condition.
Yeah, good. And one of the biggest ones we always talk about.
Yeah.
Your hands, joints, anti-CCP.
Thinking about like SLE, RA?
Yeah, autoimmune disorders, right? Yeah, good. And then, Michael, give us one more. conditions that can increase neutrophil destruction.
I think idiopathic is on the surgical side.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
There's another iatrogenic. Yeah, good. So medications, anti-inflammatories, penicillins, antivirals, these can increase neutrophil destruction. Yeah, so those are the two big categories. Do you want to summarize that, Lucy?
Right, so we've got two categories that can cause neutropenia. So destruction and underproduction. And so destruction, we said, was things like chemotherapy, autoimmune, idiopathic, iatrogenic. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. That's basically it. Those are the two broad categories that we can think of as to why they have this febrile neutropenia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. So I think it's time for me to define what febrile neutropenia is. And there's different definitions everywhere. And even the consultant, when he reviewed my script, he wrote one definition initially and then wrote a different definition later. So what I'm using is the Royal Children's Hospital of Melbourne's definition. Okay, so thinking back earlier, Mike, we had talked about the different grades of neutropenia. What do you think would be the absolute neutrophil count that they use for febrile neutropenia?
If mild's 1 to 1.5, yeah. Then anywhere below 1.5.
That was one of the definitions that he gave me, but not the one at RCH in Melbourne.
Is it zero?
No, so it's the severe. So it's anything at ANC of less than 0.5.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Or the other definition, which is very nuanced, is if they're at 1, but they have a predicted decline to less than 0.5 over the next 48 hours. But I think it's easier to just remember less than 0.5.
Yeah.
On your OSCEs. Yeah. You're just looking at that cutoff. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
In terms of fever, what do you think a fever is defined as using?
I don't know. I would say maybe 38.2.
How would you come to 0.2?
I don't know.
38 seemed too low.
Yeah, I was like, maybe not. And so I just went with 0.2.
Give another chance.
I think I do know a little bit about febrile neutropenia. I'll tell you why later. But I think it's like a fever greater than 38 for an hour or one off greater than 38.3.
I read the 38.3 somewhere, but according to RCH, it's 38.5. Yeah.
Okay. So Lucy,
you weren't. So the official definition is a single temperature above 38.5 or a sustained temperature of over 38 over 1 hour. I think I would choose a sustained temperature of 38 over 1 hour.
Gotcha.
Not 38.2. Sometimes 38.3, according to whatever guidelines you use. But
if only you got up a little bit more.
Well, if you go 38.2 for more than an hour, then...
Yeah, good. Okay, so that's the official definition according to RCH. In talking about the etiology, there's one way to identify, there's a risk index that they use called the Multinational Association of Supportive Care in Cancer, the MASC risk index. And this is used to identify low risk patients that already have neutropenia. But I like to use this as an example to show you the high risk patients, because I think those are the ones that we'd probably be more concerned about. So I'll just give you two examples. Would you be more concerned in individuals for high risk if they're asymptomatic or symptomatic?
Symptomatic.
All right, Lucy, would you be more concerned if it's a solid tumor or a liquid tumor? Liquid as in like
blood tumors.
Like,
I suppose maybe a blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blood, liquid tumor. I think that's what they've been.
They actually call them liquid tumors.
As opposed to solid, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then would you be concerned if they're inpatient, outpatient?
Inpatient.
So these are quite, I think, self-explanatory. So this is more used to risk stratify the patient, because if they're inpatient compared to outpatient, you manage them differently. Something that we'll discuss later. But this is the MASC risk index that you can use to see which patients are low risk or high risk. Okay. So now we're going to the clinical features as we do. So what do you think you'll see on a patient who is suspected of febrile neutropenia?
Fever.
Good. This is actually the only reliable sign.
Yes.
So they're feeling hot or cold or hot, sweat, shivers, and rigors. And then all the other features are things we can just think about randomly.
Well, I think you're worried about them becoming septic. That's the main issue. So, you know, shortness of breath, sweating, clammy.
Yeah.
Well, tachycardia is not a symptom, but
it's a sign. Yep.
Yeah,
sign.
Palpitations could be there.
Yeah, palpitations. Yeah, not fatigue, not feeling like themselves.
Mm.
In fact, yeah, the clinical features here are actually quite self-explanatory. Just someone who's sick.
Yeah.
And what's the function of neutrophils, Aidan?
Fight. So they were professional bacterial responders.
Yeah, and they fight off
bacteria, possibly viruses, infections,
which causes infections, right? Yeah, so any sign of infection in any sites, these are clinical features that you can expect to see. Okay, so this one's actually not that much to cover. But I think it's important to cover the investigations because these ones are a bit more stock standard for us.
So they'll have their features will just be features of someone who's sick or pre-septic and then maybe symptoms related to their specific focus.
Yeah, exactly. But it's more of an emergency because these guys are usually cancer patients. It's an oncological emergency.
Yeah.
And that's why if you don't treat it immediately, things will go south.
Yeah.
Okay. So we want to talk about that. We talk about investigations. So just general investigations. After you've done the history exam, after you've done the ADE assessment, what's the first category of investigations that you do?
Your bedside investigation.
Your bedside. Okay. So tell me what you'd do in this patient.
I think a VBG would be important. And then that can give you a lactate. You might need a separate lactate as well, but you want a lactate.
I put that under bloods, but that's cool. Fair. Yep.
You might want a urine.
Mm-hmm. Good.
At the bedside as well.
And what are you checking for there? Your suspicious self?
UTI, I think they'd be more susceptible to. And then I feel like they're the only two targeted investigations I'd do at the bedside.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Especially in oncology patients, they're usually getting their cancer treatments through what?
A central line.
Yeah, okay. So what would you also want to check for potential portals of entry for pathogens? So especially these sites, the catheter sites, the cannula sites, as a source of their infection.
Mm-hmm.
Good. All right, so moving on to bloods. You were talking about VBG earlier.
Yeah.
What other kind of bloods would you specifically get?
Probably FBC.
And what are you specifically looking for?
I'm looking for reduced neutrophils.
What's that? What's that?
Neutropenia.
No.
Absolute neutrophil thing.
Neutropenia. Neutrophil count, ANC. Yeah. ANC.
ANC.
Yeah, and what's the cutoff that you're looking for? In febrile neutropenia?
0.5.
Less than 0.5. Okay. Anything else? Just mention all the bloods that you're usually seeing.
Yeah, UEC for their baseline kidney function.
Yep, good.
And CRP. Mm-hmm. And then I think most important would be blood cultures.
Yeah,
two
good.
Two sets from two peripheral sites.
Exactly, yeah, because they're febrile. Yeah. And also they're really sick.
Yeah.
What's one test, if you guys know, that can differentiate between a bacterial and a non-bacterial infection? It's a biomarker that's quite specific.
Well, a blood test.
Mm-hmm. It aids in the diagnosis of sepsis to help guide.
I'm going to guess. This is such a guess.
Go ahead.
Actually, I'm not
going to
say
it. You got to say no.
A lumbar puncture. Would I do that? And then I'd check the CSF.
That's not bad, but not the one I'm looking for, but good.
Isn't a blood test?
It's a blood test, I think. You can order it.
I thought you just look at the neutrophils.
Would you not just look at the neutrophils?
I guess they're going to be lower.
It's a biomarker specific for bacterial infections.
It's the left shift thing?
PCT, have you heard of that?
Never heard of that in my life.
Procalcitonin is a biomarker specific for bacterial infections.
My guy.
Okay, whatever. That gives you an HD.
Okay.
Okay, good.
All right, cool.
Some other things you do specifically, and you mentioned that earlier, blood cultures, but because you're unsure about where the source of infection is, where else could you get cultures? And if you actually did an oncology ward round, you realize they do this so much. But no one did oncology ward round. So
I did.
All right. What do they order every time they have diarrhea? What do they?
Stool sample.
Stool culture.
MCS.
Yeah.
MCS. Yeah.
And that's one thing I probably think is more common in the oncology ward round.
They do MCS. Stool MCS.
Stool. Yeah. But other than the stool, you were going to do urine, right? You already have the urine analysis. Yeah. You might as well do urine there. You do blood cultures, but other things, PCR, not PCR, but what's this called?
Nasal swab.
Oral.
Okay. So all the appropriate cultures where you think
you swab everything basically.
Yeah.
Everything you swab, you swab.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. And okay, so we've done bedside bloods, micro. What's next? You'll see.
Are we doing imaging now?
Yeah, imaging. Yeah.
CXR.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Apparently,
chest X-ray.
Yeah. Apparently, you just do it even in the absence of any sickness, but you're suspicious about febrile neutropenia.
Makes sense.
Okay. Sweet. We're almost done.
Can I actually tell you about my one experience with febrile neutropenia?
Let's hear it.
So last year when I was on rural clinical school, I was in the ED. And at Wednesday, 12 p.m. every week, the junior doctors will have a radiology teaching upstairs. So the junior doctors, like a couple interns and a couple RMOs had left. I stayed down in the ED because I was enjoying my time, but I was really the only one there with about two other senior doctors and a few nursing staff. And this patient came in with febrile neutropenia, and I was like, oh, I've never seen this before, so I'll like go take the history and everything. While she's just come in and they put her into one of the acute bays, the only other patient in the acute bays starts seizing. So the two doctors go over to the seizing patient. I'm there by myself with a patient with febrile neutropenia, and I simply had no idea what to do. I didn't know about like the urgency of like if it was an emergency or not at that point, and I was like shitting bricks not knowing what I was meant to be doing.
Were you still taking history?
Well, they I gave her oxygen because she was low, so I put nasal prongs on. And then I take a bit of a history, and I cut halfway through, and I went over to the doctors who were dealing with the more urgent emergency and said, oh, like, so do I need to do anything else urgently? And they were like, oh, yeah, you like need to do some blood cultures. So then went back over to her and said, all right, we're going to do some blood cultures. And then she was like, oh, I basically said, oh, good luck. I couldn't see or feel a vein anywhere. She's like, oh, yeah, so you need to go get a hot pack. Like, you can't even make them come out unless you put a hot pack on. So I went and found a hot pack and a hot blanket, and went and put them on. And then I still couldn't find anything. I wasn't confident in pricking her because it would just have to be done again. So then I just took the history and then just made sure she was stable and waited for one of the senior doctors to be done. So yeah, it'd be good if you could give me some insight on the management.
Wait, was she like actually like unwell? Like she was unstable?
She was tachycardic and low sats, but everything else was stable. Yeah.
Well done, well done, right?
I didn't do much. Well,
what, do you know what happened afterwards, or you went to the teaching?
Admitted to the ward upstairs, and just monitored and stuff, I guess.
But yeah, sure. Okay. Nice. You actually cover a few things in management, so we'll do that now. Nice. Actually, the first part is recognizing that febrile neutropenia is a medical oncological emergency. I don't know if it's more urgent or less urgent than seizures, but it's still quite an emergency. The second thing you do is you triage the patient. So what was that triage score that I talked about earlier?
MASC,
yeah. So if they're low risk, what do you think you can do? Inpatient, outpatient, it's kind of...
Outpatient.
But if they're high risk, like Michael's patient, then you consider them for inpatient therapy. So that's the whole point of that risk stratify them. The third thing that you immediately do, which Michael was doing, was trying to gain.
Wait for someone to get IV access. Wait for someone else to do it.
Yeah, to get IV access and blood cultures. Okay? And let's just go down the pathway of high-risk individuals, right? So forget the low-risk individuals because they can just be done at a home or outpatient. This is the one thing that you have to do within 1 hour's time. This is what the official guidelines say. So they're sick.
ABX, antibiotics.
Yes, good. Use broad-spectrum empirical IV antibiotics within 1 hour. And what's the...
Tazocin,
yeah. So you use that ASAP within an hour, and you do that for 7 to 14 days, IV antibiotics, because it is an emergency. And while you're doing that, you consider additional antibiotics if you suspect there's another source of infection, like their skin or respiratory. Yeah.
So just to confirm, you're giving Tazocin prior to confirmation of what is causing the febrile neutropenia.
Yeah.
I think you have to take the blood cultures before you give antibiotics. Is that right?
No, yes, you are. You are. So that's why you gain IV access.
Yeah.
Well, if you're gaining IV access, you probably have the bloods ready.
Yeah.
And then you give your antibiotics. Yeah.
I'm just picturing...
Call for help immediately.
I'm just picturing being one in Hope Town, population 1,000.
It's only us.
And it's just me and you can't get IV access. I don't know what to do, man.
So what were you doing in the meantime?
I was just standing with it. You know, they came over after like maybe like 10 minutes once this other guy had been stabilized. Like they definitely got their IV access within the hour. But yeah, just check those nasal prongs, make sure they were the oxygen. Oh, no, I was taking the history. Like, I didn't just leave her there. No, I was like talking to her. I just wasn't doing the... any more like physical management part of it. I was still with it.
So for high-risk individuals, according to the guidelines I've read, I think you actually do the IV access, IV antibiotics before you do a repeat ABCDE assessment because it's so urgent. So then during ABCDE, you give the IV access, IV fluids, you monitor blood pressure, get their ABG, you check their fluid input, output, you get the ECG, and then you also apply nasal prongs if they're hypoxic. Yeah, supplemental oxygen. You got one mark. And then, of course, wait until the cultures come back, or when you have your chest X-ray, you treat the underlying cause. Mm-hmm. Okay? So the condition now is, if the fever continues to persist for 4 to 7 days, what would you do now? And it's not like a bacterial cause, so obviously the antibiotic's not working. Mm. What would you be thinking now?
Antibiotics. Yeah. Change your antibiotics?
No, it doesn't work. Oh. What's another cause of like opportunistic infections?
Fungal.
Fungal, yeah, good. So then you would start them on what therapy?
Antifungal therapy.
Antifungal therapy, yeah, okay. And so the chest X-ray doesn't show anything. What would you investigate in a fungal cause for, say it was a respiratory fungal cause? What other investigation would you use?
Bronchoscopy.
Another investigation of the chest.
CT.
CT of the chest, yeah. And this is for HD students. It's called a serial galactomannan assay. Serial GM assay. And that, I suspect, is for like for fungal cause. If they're, so we're going down the pathway. If their fever's not present anymore after 4 to 7 days, then you're fine, right? Then you treat them as being well. But then if they continue after 4 to 7 days, you go down the fungal pathway, okay? So these are for the high-risk individuals. You've done your immediate management and they're better now. Now we're going to talk about long-term prevention. So what do you think you generally do for these high-risk individuals? You're concerned about them.
A bit of patient education.
Sure, patient education. And what would you teach them about?
Avoid sick contacts. Avoid high-risk areas.
Good.
Present at the first sign of any illness.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Especially when they're like cancer patients, yeah, and they have like lines, tell them to have good hygiene and limit their exposure to opportunistic pathogens.
I think they have to like, if they're due for their chemo, they have to postpone that. I think that's what I'm remembering. Like if they're acutely unwell with febrile neutropenia and they're due for like chemo,
yeah,
the next day, they can't have that chemo course.
Oh yeah, and could you guess why? Like thinking about the etiology?
Yeah, because they're already they're already infected, and you're gonna make them more immunocompromised.
You're gonna reduce their neutrophil count even more. Yeah.
Is that correct?
It sounds correct.
Yeah.
I don't have it here, but I suspect you treat the emergency first before they go back to, like even with I know of spinal cord compression, like another emergency, they would have to postpone their therapy because you need to treat their life-threatening.
Yeah, that could just be an extra little like OSCE T.
Yeah. Oh yeah, if they do present for their regular cancer therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to say it again like you'd answer it in an OSCE situation,
Michael? And obviously, I'd also would not let them begin their next cycle of chemotherapy without the infection resolving.
Excellent.
Very professional.
Perfect.
Lovely.
But I think that's what happened with this lady. It was like her third presentation in like maybe 5 or 6 weeks. And she had to keep delaying her chemo because she would keep getting infected. And so she couldn't then start the next cycle of it.
Good. Thanks for that, Michael. So another thing, when we think about the etiology earlier, what are the two broad causes, Lucy, again? What were the broad causes for neutropenia?
Yes. Destruction.
Increased destruction.
Increased destruction. And always get the other one. Lost.
Decreased.
Making.
Yes. Exactly. What's a fancy word for
what's
making?
The word for that?
I don't know.
Making works.
Yeah, okay. Making. Decreased making. Okay. So how can you? Is there something you can do to stimulate
decrease
making?
Decrease making and increase breaking. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah.
So Adrian, how can you increase making of white blood cells or neutrophils? Have you heard of anything that can stimulate?
You're talking about the GCSF.
Yes. And what does it stand for?
Growth colony stimulating factor?
Granulocyte colony stimulating factor. So you can consider that as a thing to help give them more neutrophils so that they don't get to their ANC of less than 0.5.
Is that one a preventative measure for the future? Or
Yeah.
Or is it for the acute management?
It's a long... We're talking about long-term prevention.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay, so it's something you could consider.
Yeah.
It's in the guidelines, but the consultant said it's not really used, but something you can use in your OSCEs.
Yeah. What, vaccinations and stuff as well?
Yeah, perfect. So that's the third thing. Nice, yeah. Nice, so in these high-risk individuals, you need to check for their vaccinations. What else would you... You can also give them stuff as well. Like maybe you're a representing patient, comes up 3 times. What can you give them ahead of time for prevention?
Not sure.
Prophylaxis of
prophylactic antibiotics?
Yeah, antibiotics, antifungals, antivirals, if that's the cause, right? Because you just don't want to get them sick.
Yep.
And they've got other priorities to work on. Yeah. And as you said earlier, Lucy, the screening for vaccinations, hepatitis, HSV, anything that could cause them to be sick, or even TB, as we talked about earlier.
Mm.
So that's pretty much it for the whole episode of febrile neutropenia. Hope that was concise enough. Mm. I'm just going to give three key takeaways of febrile neutropenia. Febrile neutropenia is an oncological emergency defined as the presence of neutropenia of less than 0.5, accompanied by a fever with a single temperature above 38.5 or above 38 for an hour. Neutropenia is caused by conditions that increase neutrophil destruction or conditions that decrease neutrophil production. And then finally, empiric antibiotic therapy should be started within the first hour of onset. Subsequently, you want to treat the underlying cause. Thank you so much, Lucy. Thank you, Michael and Aidan, for joining us today at 1 p.m.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
Absolutely. Pleasure.
I'm sure this is going to come up as an oncological emergency.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. It is not going to come up. Fucking tumor lysis syndrome or some shit.
But, yeah, jeez. Check those nasal prongs, mate.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and share it with your friends. It helps us get discovered and helps more medical students with understanding their own first principles. Check out 1pm.wiki, and for all your first principles, keep it right here at 1pm.